Coming up next is Hemp Rock Radio on
WEEDRadionetwork.com. Thanks for turning us on.
Hi, Hemp Rockers. Welcome to Hemp Rock Radio with the Happy Hemptress, featuring the Hemp Rock Cafe and Pottsbury Bakery.
Hemp Rock is online at HempRock.com. The Hemp Rock Hemp Line is at 513-684-HEMP. That's 513-684-HEMP.
And now, here's Hemp Rock Radio with all things hemp, marijuana, the drug war, and more, including guests, music, news, food, and Burn Man's 420.
I'm going to do a song here that Jack Daniels wrote for me. Pop the top, and it'll write you a song.
Well, friends don't last forever, and talk is cheap. But the bond between two brothers can't be beat. Sometimes they raise a glass, another night so kick your ass. Little brother's gonna be there when you need. Well, mama's raising hell since papa passed, but they raised us with a little bit of class. I know whiskey from bourbon, and that family's worth serving. Now to leave my troubles in the past. Jack Daniels, my brother, dear old friend of mine. With you and him and Gin and Jim, we're headed for good times. Tom, it's nice to see you aging well, doing fine. It's family reunion tonight. My old lady took my truck and half my stash, but she didn't touch my willy or my cash. Now I'm drinking to divorce and love that's never forced, knowing that a brother's bond will last. Jack Daniels, my brother, dear old friend of mine. My hero in a bottle when it comes to killing time. It's always good to see you aging well, doing fine. It's family reunion tonight. When my soul goes soaring on to heaven, gonna ride on up on dear old number 7, straight up through Tennessee, on down on my knees. Now be sure to save some for the river. Daniel's my brother, dear old friend of mine. There's nothing we can't conquer, straight up to closing time. It's always good to see you aging well, doing fine. It's family reunion. Tonight. It's family reunion tonight.
Randy Oakley and the Posse, ladies and gentlemen. Woo!
Thank you, thank you. And welcome to the Cheryl Schumann Rally on the Square 2013 for the legalization of marijuana and industrial hemp. And if my co-host over here would like to come up here and join me, we'll get this thing started. Like Miss Cheryl Schumann, who has flown all the way out here from the West Coast, right over there in the red. Give her a big round of applause. This lady's doing a lot of great things for the legalization of marijuana and industrial hemp.
All right, good evening, everybody. I am Ken Nagley. You introduced yourself as Senior Bull, I assume. Yeah, we are here. We've been doing this for a long time, and this is another day of triumph and freedom. At least we get to speak about it, if nothing else. Again, we want to encourage everybody to stop over at the Hemp Rock shop over here with the I'm Ethel van that could run on hemp oil, if she so chose, and if it were possible. All right, ladies and gentlemen, again, we want to encourage you to be sure to visit some of the sponsors of today's events, very specifically Hemptations. You saw Beach up here earlier telling you about all the industrial hemp, but if you visit his booth, he will be happy to tell you about it.
You can check them out on Facebook at Hemptations. Like them, and they will like you back, and they may even stalk you for a while. Beach is kind of funny like that.
All right, again, and forget, this event is all for Ohio Rights Group. They are putting it on as well as being presented by Hemp Rock. But the Ohio Rights Group can be found at ohiorightsgroup.org.
Miss Linda Bumpus, give her a round of applause.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to bring our next group of speakers up here. As a matter of fact, our next gentleman is going to introduce our guest of honor for this evening. Woo-hoo. So he has a cool double job. Not only does he get to talk to you, he gets to introduce the Martha Stewart of marijuana. That's exciting. I wish that was my nickname, even though it wouldn't make any sense. But still, I like that.
You could be the Bob Vila.
Yeah, there you go. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to introduce our next speaker. As a matter of fact, he is the president of the Ohio Rights Group. The president. So he must be really important and people like him a whole lot. Ladies and gentlemen, please put your hands together for Mr. John Pardee.
Just let me clarify, the only reason I'm president, because nobody else wanted the job. And I tell you what, after all these months, I'm kind of doubting my decision. This is hard work, let me tell you, people. Just so you know, when Cheryl and I are done speaking, we're going to be giving away a vape pen. We're going to be giving away some cannabis medicine. We're going to be giving away a T-shirt. And humble on me, I'm going to be giving away a signed copy of my children's book I wrote. And the only way that you can enter to win is you have to be down front. So anybody who wants this product, these things are, it's a $60 cannabis medicine. It's got to be a $50 vape pen. There's a lot of, you know, quality medicine up here. So if you want to enter, your butt needs to be down here, down front, because we have a message we want to preach to Ohio, and you guys need to hear this up close. There we go. That's what I'm talking about. Let's get intimate, Ohio. Let's get close. Cheryl and I have been traveling all over the state. We want to see all you people, everybody way in the back. You're so hard to talk to. I want to be able to look you in the eye and tell you what's going on. And Howard Rotz, who spoke earlier from LEAP, has also donated a book. So anybody who's down front, when Cheryl's done, he's going to qualify. All right. Who's ready for change, Ohio? Yeah. Woo! I tell you what, I'm so ready. I've traveled all over this state. I've met so many people, and everybody has a very similar story. Gut-wrenching stories of people who have been hurt by prohibition, not by cannabis. They've been hurt by prohibition. Not a single soul has ever been hurt by cannabis. No one's ever died from it. No one's ever gotten sick from it. No one's ever died from... Look what's going on with the medicines out there today. The ones that they prescribe that we can have legally. Those are the ones that are killing us. Do you guys realize that opiate deaths are outstripping car accidents now? And that's legal, and cannabis isn't. Does that make any sense to anybody? No. Of course not. It doesn't make any sense. This is crazy. We need to change this laws. The only reason we can't get this thing changed is because of the intransigence of our government. But the thing about it is, here in Ohio, we the people have the power. We the people have the power. And I'm going around the state of Ohio and telling people, this is the message I've been telling people. Cannabis is our right. We don't need permission. And by vote of the people, we are going to end prohibition. Yeah. But we can't do it alone. This has been hard work. Linda and all her team down here in Cincinnati are doing an amazing job. They've been working their butts off. We just left the folks in Toledo. They've been working their butts off. We already have three counties that have met their state minimum. We need 44 counties total. So if we can get a few more going, we can get that momentum rocking and rolling. We've got sponsors coming on board who are helping us. Our message is getting out. We've had an incredible amount of media exposure on this trip. We were talking to folks in Dayton. They're going to be doing a segment on the Ohio Red Scoop during their sweeps week. You know what that means? If you're doing it during sweep week, they know this is a big story. This is on the lips of every Ohioan. Everyone's talking about this. You got to realize, we are the silent majority. We are the silent majority. More than 60% of Ohioans support therapeutic cannabis. If we have more than 60% of the people supporting this, our job is to get it on the ballot. We get it on the ballot, it's over. It is over. And you guys have to help. You guys got to make this thing a reality. You got to go to our website. A lot of people don't realize our petition is downloadable. You go to our website, ohiorightsgroup.org. You can sign up, download our petition, go around your neighborhood, collect signatures, mail it into the Columbus office, and those are going to start counting. We need to get 385,000 signatures into the state house by July 3rd. So we got a lot of work to do, and we don't have a lot of time to do it. But you guys need to be spreading the word. You guys need to be getting on social media, telling everybody exactly what we're doing. This is a people power movement. This amendment was written of, for, and by the people. It has nothing to do with corporations. This is about rights established for the citizens of Ohio. Our amendment is very different. If you heard what's going on in Michigan and California, what happens when they pass a law? They pass a law to allow therapeutic cannabis. What happens? Parts of it get struck down in court. Legislatures try to write trap laws or do defunding. If we establish this as a right in our Constitution, it can never be taken away. It'll be your right. It'll require the state of Ohio to defend you as a citizen of the state of Ohio if anybody tries to infringe upon those rights. It'll never be taken away. Our amendment has been called a model for the nation. Activists all over the nation see this. You know what? This is what we should have done a long time ago. We have the best amendment on the planet. We need you guys to make this thing a reality. And the thing about this thing is it's a beautiful thing because it speaks to everybody. It speaks to patients who need therapeutic cannabis. It speaks to farmers who want to grow a profitable crop without damaging the environment. It's low consumption of water, doesn't need herbicides, pesticides, and a great cash crop. They can get twice to three times what they can get for corn and soybean. This is amazing. We are a big agricultural state. We're a big manufacturing state. You guys can imagine what's going to happen in the state of Ohio when we pass this amendment. How many good-paying jobs are going to be out there? How much our industries are going to grow? Think about getting a job in the cannabis industry. Who wants to get up, get a good-paying job, and enjoy your work? Yeah! I know I do. I'm so ready to bring this reality back to Ohio. My son, like many of people that you probably know, is a refugee. He was almost killed in a car accident 5 years ago, and his doctors told him pain was going to be his constant companion. And we had to make a decision. What are we going to do? Well, they started prescribing him opiates. Well, I looked at that. What's the track record of opiates? You go from prescription opiates to street opiates to heroin to death, just like Howard Ratz said. That they know where that leads. Acetaminophen and Tylenol is the leading cause of liver failure in America today. You want to prescribe that to my son? He's 25 years old, trying to take Tylenol for the rest of his life. He wouldn't make it to 60. His liver would be shot and he'd be dead. There's only one therapeutic compound out there that's a solid analgesic that you can use for a lifetime without ill effects, and that's cannabis. I can look people in the eye and I can tell them, I am not afraid to admit that. I was on stage in Toledo with a doctor, Dr. Carone, Heather Carone. She was amazing. She's an ER doc. And she was telling me 90% of the cases that come into her ER are alcohol related. You know how many are cannabis related? Boom. Zero. And think about the other thing too, our veterans. We're losing our veterans at an alarming rate through suicide because of their battle-related injuries. She's had to treat veterans with gunshot wounds to the head, self-inflicted gunshot wounds to the head, because they couldn't take the agony anymore. Guess what we know helps our veterans? Cannabis. Our veterans in Ohio are at a disadvantage. The VA has made a directive that any state that has therapeutic cannabis written in their law, the VA will honor that. So if you have a veteran in the state of Ohio, we pass our amendment, we're protecting our veterans because they will have access to a medicine that we know saves their life. I've had many veterans come up to me and tell me, this medicine has saved my life. And we need to get that to them. We need to make it happen. We have to come together, people. I've been telling everybody, united we win. United we win. I tell you what, I'm on this campaign trail. I've met people who are the most strident liberals working with the most staunch conservatives. They're coming together on this thing because they know it's a people's rights issue. This is our right, and we gotta fight for it. We gotta make it happen. No corporation, no major, you know, multinational corporations that could come in here and bail us out, because this is about people. This is about making things happen for us here in Ohio. So all I'm gonna say is, after we leave Cincinnati, we are going to be heading to Columbus is our next stop. I've been picking up petitions all along the way. I got a trunk full of signed petitions. These people all over the state are energized. I will pick your petitions up. I will take them to Columbus. We're going to add more to our counts. We're going to get there. We're going to make this happen. We're going to win in 2014, because you know what's going to happen in 2016? 2016, when we make it legal, the presidential candidates are going to try to come through Ohio, and they're going to try to win the White House. What do they need to win the White House? What state? Ohio. They need Ohio to win that state. What's going to happen when Ohio's a legal state in 2014? They're not going to win the White House without promising and declaring full-throated and without equivocation that they're going to end federal prohibition. We want to help all the citizens from coast to coast. It's time to end the misery, time to end the sadness, time to end the suffering. I want my kids going to college, not to prison. This is ridiculous. All right, I'm going to conclude by saying I have been so blessed and honored on this journey. I saw Cheryl on The View, and she moved me. And I had to reach out to her on Facebook, because I found her on Facebook, and I said, that was amazing. And I told her what we're doing in Ohio. Little did I know she was going to write me back. She said, I want to help. You know, she dropped everything. Hey, man, let's give her a round of applause. So she dropped everything she was doing, and the Ohio Rights Group, I tell you what, these are amazing volunteers all around the state. We worked for 6 weeks to put this thing on. And I tell you what, I had professional promoters, you know, when I was trying to talk to help us out and say, hey, can you help us out? And he said, yeah, when do you want to do it? And I told him, he said, he goes, I don't have enough time. But you know what? We did all the lifting. It was the Ohio Rights Group that came together. We worked our butts off the last 6 weeks to make this tour a reality, because we knew we had to get our message out there. And what better spokesperson to get our message out there than the Martha Stewart of marijuana, Cheryl Schumann. She has been dynamic. She's been electric. I tell you what, she has been a trooper. This has been a hard, there's been nights we've had 4 hours of sleep. Last night, we're all working on 4 hours of sleep, people. We're on fumes, let me tell you. But this is so important. We want to keep fighting through this. We're fighting through this for our families. We're fighting through it for your families. We've got to come together, like I said. Left, right, old, young, black, white, we got to come together and make this thing happen. This is a people's movement. So I want you guys to give my friend Cheryl Schumann a warm Ohio welcome, because she's an Ohio native. She's a Buckeye. Let's hear it for Cheryl Schumann!
Thank you guys so much. I'm going to do something a little unorthodox. The very first thing I'd like to do is I would like to bring some of the amazing women up here. Stacy and Lynn Wilson and Mary from North Ohio Normal. I want to bring you up here on stage because, you know, it's not just about me. The secret to legalization is women and moms. I want you guys up here with me. Tanya, can you come up here? Can you come down here? How can we get you up here? It's not just me. And now what I want you to do while the women are coming up here, I want you to do something else really special, because this, what we're looking at, is our community. These are our brothers and our sisters. And you know what? We are all in this war together. So I want you to turn around. I want you to say hi to the person next to you. I want you to introduce yourself. I want you to get to know each other, just like in church. Remember when you used to have to go to church? Come on, now shake some hands. Introduce yourself. All walks of life. I'm expecting a little bit of friendship here. Come on. We're all in this together. Unity in the community. One of the things that I want to talk to you about is, listen, it is not easy being a woman, first of all, and it is certainly not easy being a woman in this drug war, because not only do we have to fight against the prohibitionists, we are fighting amongst each other, and that's why these women standing here with me are all part of the secret. You talk to all the top political strategists, and I've talked to people who advise Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi, and they will tell you, women and moms are the secret to legalization, and it is these women that help put this event together to take care of you and your rights. And we take our hits, we take our shots. So I want to stand here loud and proud and tell you a little bit about my story and how I came here. Has anyone seen any of the media that we've done? Do you know my story? By a show of applause, just so I know that you're here and you're listening, have you guys seen the media that we've done? Okay. Let me start off by saying my name is Cheryl Schumann, and I am a proud and loud cannabis consumer born and raised on a tobacco farm, of all things, just outside of one of the poorest counties in this nation, Scioto County. And I grew up Twin Creek holler without running water or electricity until I was 14 years old, and I am proud of those humble beginnings. Yeah. And you know what? I remember working on those tobacco farms, and my stepdad would allow me to keep the scraps so we could go down to Maysville, Kentucky to the tobacco outlets, and I got to keep the revenue from those scraps to put my way through private school. And you know, one of the things that I learned very early when I had my first day at private school was the difference between the haves and the have-nots. And I only had enough money through a year of out there, you know, stripping tobacco, pegging tobacco, planting tobacco, curing tobacco, hanging tobacco, suckering tobacco. And I know, look, I know how to grow things, which has actually come to help me later in my years. but I do grow some fine cannabis, but that's later in the story. But one of the things I learned on my very first day at school, and I was so proud of myself because, you know what, I was brought up to value human qualities, not money, but things like hard work, integrity, ethics, being good and loving our neighbor. And I remember my first day at school, none of those rich kids wanted to sit with me, and I didn't understand why. And when I actually had the gall to ask them, why don't you guys want to sit with me? And the girl looked over at me, you know, the mean girls, there are the mean girls. And she said, well, because you're poor. And I was dumbfounded because, you know what, it was actually the very first time I had heard the word poor. But I did know enough to go and look it up in the dictionary, and I remember that so vividly because I was so scared and lonely, and I was the new girl in school. So I went to Sister Demna, and I asked her, I said, where's the dictionary? I look it up, and it says poor, one who lacks material possessions. Well, that's not so bad, you know? And then I started really realizing the differences between the rich and the poor. And even though I only had enough money to afford one uniform, I washed that uniform every day, and I got suited up and showed up for school, and I got an education, and I was able to build a life for myself. Yeah. So never underestimate that some hard work and determination literally can make the American dream come true, because I'm telling you, the American dream is still possible. And right now, don't underestimate, you are witnessing the birth of a brand new industry. Cannabis will be a $47 billion industry by 2016, whether the prohibitionists like it or not. The genie is out of the bottle. I work in the media. That is what I'm skilled at. I started working in the media when I was 17 years old. Because I was poor, this was back in 1977. I'm 53 years old today.
Happy birthday!
Oh, not today, but right at this moment, I'm 53. I'll be 54 in March. But I started my career at age 17, and I was known as America's Coupon Queen. I started actually on the Bob Braun Show here at WLWT. And what had happened, you know, I had started this couponing and refunding system when I was in high school. And as a cheerleader, because even though those mean girls didn't like me at first, I'm one of those people, it's like, I will make you like me. You may not like me now, but I will make you like me, because I'm going to kill you with kindness and niceness. And then you're going to say, oh my God, you're so nice. I didn't realize you were so nice. And then I always tell people, and John will attest to this, I always tell people, shh, don't tell anyone I'm nice, because I've got that bitchy image to maintain. And if people think I'm nice, they won't fear me, right? But I'm very proud to say that Bob Braun, he saw an article in the local newspaper where I had helped a little old lady with my coupons and refunds to get free groceries for that week because she couldn't afford to pay for them. And I also started teaching people how to get refund offers back. So Bob Braun invited me on the show and live on the air. I was 17 years old. And we were talking, and it was just so cool. And I was just like, wow, yeah. You know, I was like, wow. And back in those days, we didn't have commercials like they do now. You know, Bob brought me on the show, and he's like, ladies and gentlemen, we have the coupon queen here, blah, blah, blah. And I'm on there. I've got the biggest kiss-ass grin. It's like, wow, I'm on TV. This is pretty cool. You know, and I'm watching him, and he's got his Tyson chicken commercial, which he's doing. He's like, okay, we're going to cut to a commercial. And I'm looking at the camera. He's like, hi, we've got Tyson chicken here. And we did our own commercials back then. And so that's when at age 17, I learned about branding. And branding is a really key component to this story. So keep in mind branding and how Johnson & Johnson and Procter & Gamble, they are famous for family brands, right? Well, let's think about the brand of cannabis consumers. Are you guys happy with what you've seen before we started our media campaign about how the media, the mainstream media, was painting us? Because I know I wasn't. Because you know what they try to do? They try to make us look like the stupid stoners or the stupid this that can't get it together, that are sunk into the couch and like, da-da-da, picking our nose or whatever. But you know, listen, there's people out there who are shining examples. You know, these women are great examples, amazing women, hardworking women, good hearts, kind caregivers, and loving, and they work their asses off. And then we have people who are productive members of society like Richard Branson. Look at him. He's a billionaire. You can't get more responsible and successful like that. And let's talk about couch potatoes. A little guy named by the name of Michael Phelps. Anyone know Michael Phelps? To me, one of the greatest athletes of all time. So when I got sick, the very first time that I used cannabis, I was 36 years old. And for me, I was one of those people, I grew up in an alcoholic home, and it wasn't pretty going home. I used to get so involved in extracurricular activities because I was afraid to go home. When I went home, my alcoholic stepfather used to beat the you-know-what out of my mom, and it was hard. And I realized at a very early age that alcohol can make people very violent. And I used to run away, and I'd run away up in the hills where a group of hippies from the Haight-Ashbury district had come out. And I didn't know what cannabis was then, but I'll tell you one thing. I never heard an argument in that home. Everybody was happy all the time. And I thought, I don't know what their secret ingredient is, but it's so much nicer here. And so many times, that group saved my life. And I will never forget it, and I will always be grateful for that. But when I tried cannabis for the first time, I was 36 years old. I was one of those Susie Straits. Because of my stepfather, I was afraid of anything that would alter my level of consciousness because I didn't want to be like him. So when I was going through a divorce, a really bad divorce, and I started having post-traumatic stress disorder and daymares and nightmares about things that my stepfather did to our family, and it really messed me up. I started having flashbacks about how my stepfather would use me as target practice with his shotguns. We had a pile of river rocks out on the farm. And to teach me the work ethic, and that's why I'm a workaholic today. My stepfather used to take me and make me take the rocks one by one and throw them over that fence. And when I didn't move fast enough to suit him, he would either shoot at me with a shotgun or he would use an electric cattle prod to shock me in the back and send me into convulsions. I was 8 years old. So for a long time, I was having these nightmares and post-traumatic stress disorder. And anyone who tells you that post-traumatic stress disorder is not real, I'm telling you it's real. I'm 53 years old, and those memories are just as vivid today as they were back then. And I didn't know what was going on, though. And when I went to my therapist and my doctors at age 36, and I said, hey, I really need some help because these memories are flooding, and I can't control it. And all I can think of is I just want this pain to stop. And that's what's happening to a lot of our veterans and a lot of women who are domestic violence victims and living in fear. And we shouldn't have to live in that fear. So my doctors prescribed 80 milligrams of Prozac a day. They prescribed Xanax, they prescribed sleeping pills, and then another pill to wake up. And I literally, I'll tell you something, talk about mood stabilizers, my moods are stabilized all right. It was like, I went from running a multi-million dollar company to literally suffering the side effects of literally thinking every single day about just wanting to die. So one day I went to my therapist and I said, hey, you got to help me because I want to be here for my kids. And right now all I can think about is I just want to end this because the pain is so bad. And after having all of those pharmaceuticals in my system, which the side effects are, if you listen to the pharmaceutical commercials on Wellbutrin and Prozac and all these drugs, the side effect that they tell you under the, it could cause suicide. And my doctor looked at me and he said, you know what? It's 1996. Prop 215 had just passed in California, which legalized medical cannabis for the first state in the country. Yeah. And he looked at me and he said, hey, I could go to prison for even telling you this as a medical professional, but he said, you know what, lady? You need to smoke a joint. And my first thought was, oh, my God. I thought at first I was being set up for some kind of a custody dispute. I'm like, no, that can't be it. That's my doctor. That's my doctor, and he's telling me this. Then he started telling me about mood stabilizers and about the history of cannabis and how it was used for 3,000 years in our pharmacies, and it wasn't until the 1930s that it was taken out of the pharmacies. And you know what? For the first time in my life, Susie Strait here, who swore she would never do anything to alter her level of consciousness or take drugs. To this day, I've never smoked a cigarette. I've never done cocaine or any kind of illegal drugs. But for the very first time in my life, I started feeling healed. And I am convinced at that moment, yeah, I think that deserves a little bit of applause. So I started using cannabis, and one of the things that I learned was there were other people using it too, but they were in the closet. And keep in mind, this is right about the time of AIDS and the LGBT movement, and then I started realizing, you know, when I confided in two of my best friends, I'm like, you aren't going to believe this, but my psychiatrist has his own garden for marijuana in his backyard, and my psychiatrist rolled a joint for me. And they were like, oh my God, we smoke pot too. And you know what? Those two women that I very first told are still my very best friends in the whole world. I mean, and not just best friends, but like if you accidentally run over somebody in the freeway or something, they'll come and help you bury the bodies. That's how good of friends they are. But anyway, so I started using cannabis. And you know what? My children would be the very first person to tell you. My daughters are 32 and 26 now, but they will tell you that when I started using cannabis and got off of the pharmaceuticals and off of the mood stabilizers, they got their mom back. Yeah. And of course, one of the very first things, and I know we all know this, one of the very first things that I wanted to do when I was up out of bed, it's like I wanted to bake brownies, of course, with my kids. So anyway, fast forward, you know, everyone was still in the closet then. And again, I equate this movement, it's a civil rights issue. It is our bodies, our choice, and we are all in this together. And now I equate it very similar to the LGBT movement. And this is a lifestyle, choose what we choose to do, whom we choose to love, how we choose to treat our bodies. So, well, I love you too. Thank you. But fast forward 10 years, my parents divorced when I was only 18 months old. I never had the opportunity to see my real parents in the same room. And one day in 2006, I got a call from my mom, whom I had not talked to in decades, because my stepdad wouldn't let me. My poor mom. I know she did the best that she could. Thank God he's dead now. But I got a call from my mom, and she says, you're not going to believe what happened. I'm like, what happened? She goes, well, you know when you put me on classmates.com after your stepdad passed away? And I said, yeah. And she goes, your real dad called me. And I'm like, are you, get out of town. My real dad? She goes, yeah, and we're getting married again. After 40-something years, my parents are together again. So I was so excited. You know, I'd been working really hard. I do have a tendency to be a workaholic. My work is everything to me. I've been married twice, divorced twice, swore I'd never get married again. I have two daughters that I love very much, and I dedicated my life just to my work. These rings are my commitment rings to myself and my girls. You know, I'm a single parent, and I'm a proud single parent. But I got in my car. I had a Porsche at the time, put on a bikini, put the top down, drove straight through. I get to my mom's house, and she's like, I'm there, of course, you know, I'm all excited. I'm like, hi, I've got a mom and dad now. I was super excited. And granted, I was tired. I drove straight through. And my mom answered the door, and she goes, oh, you don't look so good. I'm like, give me a break. It's been 4 days. And she goes, nope. I'm telling you, there's something about your skin doesn't look right. And she goes, you know, your Uncle Ned just was diagnosed and died of pancreatic cancer in 3 weeks. My favorite uncle. So I went to the doctor at my mom's insistence, and literally the doctor came in, did a pelvic, did an ultrasound. We started with the OBGYN, because when you're a woman, that's what you got to do. Get up in the stirrups. It's not pleasant. That's probably why I avoided it for so long. Well, it could be pleasant, but that's another story. So I knew that there was a problem when the doctor took my mom in the other room, and my mom came back crying. So what was supposed to be a happy reunion turned out to the beginning of my diagnosis of having cancer. Ovarian cancer is completely asymptomatic. I just thought I was depressed. I just thought I was stressed because I'm getting to meet my parents for the first time. I was told that I wouldn't live to my next birthday. I gathered my children. I had emergency surgery. I had a radical hysterectomy. They took everything out, including part of my bladder, part of my colon. I ballooned up to over 210 pounds, and then I dropped down to 102 pounds. And when I went, I got transferred up to Columbus, started treatment. It was a number of surgeries, a number of chemo, a number of radiation. And then I gathered my children together because the end was coming, and they'd done all that they could. And I'd forgotten how lonely I was because I was alone, and I'd lived in L.A. for a number of decades, and all my friends were gone. But my daughter came to see me, and she brought my laptop. And I'd forgotten that I had signed up for the Match.com 6-month guarantee to find love before I left for Los Angeles. And a gentleman wrote to me that I'd gone to high school with. And he goes, oh my God, you look great. And I said, well, those pictures are a little old and I don't look like that anymore. And I had to tell him, I'm dying. Hardest thing I ever had to tell somebody. So he started visiting me in the hospital, and the first day he came, true to my coupon queen fashion, I was clipping a coupon for my own cremation. Because I didn't want my kids to be burdened with that. And one of the biggest problems when you're terminally ill or chronically ill is you become very depressed because you feel like you're a burden to your families. And that's what's happening in Ohio and other states all across the country. There are people who are very, very seriously ill. So anyway, Fred started visiting me in the hospital. We agreed that instead of wasting my away in the hospital, he said, you know what, girl? If you're going to die, you might as well go out with a smile on your face. And that was like music to my ears. His sister was growing CBD. How many people know what CBD is? CBD is an active ingredient in the cannabis plant that has been shown to cure cancer, to help with seizures and all that. And so I went out to the farm, and sure enough, he rolled one up for me. He took care of me. I laughed so hard. I'd never had so much fun in years and years and years, and it brought back that 1996 thing. I'm like, damn, I miss this stuff, you know, and I felt good again. So then, of course, I was all giggly, and I couldn't wait, and I was excited, and I've got my laptop, so I'm going on there and doing what my mom says, going on the Google. And so I started looking up everything I could find about cancer and cannabis, and that's when I learned about Rick Simpson. That's when I saw Tanya Davis. That's when I saw a number of these top activists. And when you start reading the testimonials and the real-life stories about how cannabis has changed people's lives, you know, I set my daughter down. I said, I want to do my own garden. I want to go back to California. I want to do my own garden. And what I have left as far as time, I want to leave a legacy behind. I want to come out of the closet. I want to educate people. I want them to understand that this plant can heal people. And I was one of the biggest skeptics ever. Yeah. And it was me saying this. So I sat down with my girls, and their first concern was, Mom, you're in Ohio. You could go to jail for this. And I'm thinking, God, I'm sick. I don't want to go to jail. And said, that jail's not fun. So we decided to go to California, went to California, and then that's when I started telling my story on YouTube. And Normal came to me and asked me to start the Beverly Hills Normal chapter. And I started thinking about this, and I went back to my days at Bob Braun, and I started thinking about the whole coupon queen thing, and that's when I realized, you know what? This was all destiny. This was all meant to be, because all cannabis needed was a rebranding campaign. Yeah. Right? Yeah. it needs a professional rebranding campaign. You know, because the media did not portray us the way I felt we, as modern cannabis consumers, specifically women, dynamic, remarkable, hardworking, honest, good women. And I started hearing about Pauline Sabin. And that year, my dear friend Tanya Davis won the Pauline Sabin Award. Who knows, by show of applause, who Pauline Sabin is? Do you really know who Pauline Sabin is? Because I will test you, I swear. Pauline Sabin was a woman of society who, back in the 1930s, got together a group of amazing women, just like these women right here, and she started having dinner parties and these ladies who lunch, and those are the women who led the overturn of alcohol prohibition. And when I met Tanya and I heard about this Pauline Sabin Award, I was thinking to myself, well, Tanya's from my home state. This girl gets more done from a wheelchair than hundreds of people I know do in their entire lifetimes. She is a true inspiration. And so I was looking at that and I thought, I'm going to start talking to my friends. So I put the word out to my best friend, Dory, who was a casting director for a show called Wilfred. And I let her know, I'm like, I'm back in town. I've got my own marijuana garden up north. We're having fun. My daughter and I got 31 different strains. So we're like Baskin Robbins, 31 different flavors of pot, right? Which I thought was really cool because different strains work for different ailments, right? So we had it all. And then the phone rings, and it's David Zuckerman, who's the executive producer of Wilfred. And he calls me. He's like, oh, hey, this is Dory's brother. I'm like, hey, how are you doing? He's like, look, I heard you have cancer. Man, that's really a bummer. That sucks. But you know what? I heard you have a marijuana garden, and that's really cool. And he said, I'm doing this pilot. It's a show called Wilfred. It's starring Elijah Wood. I said, okay. And he says, I need those pot plants. He said, we're shooting the pilot. And I said, well, what's it about? And what do you need the pot plants for? And at that time, I had them in smart pots. So they were actually portable, right? Smart pots. And he says, look, this is about a pot smoking dog. And in this particular scene, he goes in and he raids the neighbor's grow. So I put the plants in the pickup. I start driving down to Los Angeles. And I was able to go from being a sick and dying cancer patient to a living, healing marijuana expert for film and television. Yeah. And not only that, they were paying me $500 an hour to tell them what to do. So I got my life back. And then I started, you know, with our own garden, we had excess medicine. And then I started learning about people, again, who grew up like I did, who were poor. You know, and they needed medicine. So we started donating all of our excess medicine to veterans and to women in need who were single parents, some multiple sclerosis patients, some AIDS patients. And you know what? That karma, that healing, that knowing that you're helping people is healing in and of itself. So then I sat down with my daughter. I'm like, okay, we need to do a media campaign. This is a rebranding campaign. Okay, let's think great brands. Procter & Gamble, Johnson & Johnson, you know. And so we had this big press conference, and Cheech Marin was there, and we launched Beverly Hills Normal. And the reporters showed up, and I was so excited because in one way it was terrible because there were raids going down in L.A. But for me, which was good because we're all about getting the message out, and I was like, God, these raids are exactly what we need to stop. So all these reporters show up. The first reporter to interview me in my new position as spokesperson for this new brand, the guy comes to me and goes, so tell me your name again. What is it you do? And just, I've got live television. Come on. I said, well, we have a magazine. We have our own line of products that we're developing. I work in media. We have a reality series in development. He goes, oh, that's too much. Okay. You're the Martha Stewart of marijuana. Does that work for you? And I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah, I guess that works. Martha Stewart of marijuana. Okay, she has her own talk show at the time. She had a deal with Kmart, so she had an endorsement. I said, yeah, that works for me. So the reporter starts, and he goes, okay, we're live in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And ladies and gentlemen, we're here with the Martha Stewart of marijuana, and it stuck. So that's how people know me now. So I called my friend Al Olson that I used to work with at the Today Show up in Seattle. I said, Al, listen. We need a rebranding campaign. He says, you know what? You've built the first brand in this industry. And I said, but we need to get it on the Today Show. Come on, you got to pitch it for me. He said, you know what? Mainstream television will cover this young lady when hell freezes over. Well, you know what? 3 years later, this summer, hell froze over. And what I decided to do, I try to do as much activism work as I can, but I know media, and I have relationships with celebrities and producers, and I realize with a proper media campaign, we can reach millions of people because it's about the message, and it's about telling individual stories like these, and it's about moving people and touching their hearts and getting them to listen, because there's that old saying, never judge anyone until you walk a mile in their shoes. And I know for a fact that when you have a loved one who's dying or who's in pain, you will do anything to give them a better quality of life. And that's what it came down to. So you know what? What I started doing is my little video diaries, because we live in the age of YouTube and social media, and they can't stop us. And right now, our social media networks are actually more powerful than mainstream media. Yeah. Margaret Mead said in the past, she said, never underestimate that a group of small people can change the world, because in fact, it's all that ever really has. And that's why I wanted you guys to congregate and get to know each other, because we are in this war together. We are in the trenches together. And you know what? Look, I have my haters. Some people don't like me, but that's okay, because I love everyone. We are all in this war together, no matter what your race, no matter what your sexual preference, no matter what your age, no matter where you grew up or what school you went to. We are all in this together, and I am not going to stop until we get the job done. I want to tell you a funny little story. You know, I grew up a hillbilly. I was a hillbilly, and I'm telling you, when I first started on Bob Braun, he's like, oh, no. No, honey, you can't talk like that. And so I went through voice training and everything, so I was kind of sort of able to disguise my upbringing. But when Forbes magazine did an article about my company, they called me the real Beverly Hillbilly. And the lady who did the article, she says, I hope that didn't offend you. I'm like, are you kidding me? I am proud of my humble beginnings. I am proud of my hard work. So I started keeping these video diaries, and I videoed everything that I could find with every great woman I could find. I started putting it up online. And then this summer, I started doing cannabis tastings. I started learning about how to cook with cannabis, both in raw form, in oil form. I started learning that you can use cannabis-infused olive oils and whatnot. So one of my friends, who was a chef at La Dolce Vita, which is a shishi-shushu restaurant in Beverly Hills, called me and said, oh my God, I heard about your illness. I want to come and cook for you. So I'm like, sister, girlfriend, I am going to start calling all my friends. And I did this little video diary of our cannabis tasting, very similar to a wine tasting with an elegantly prepared gourmet meal. Oh, okay. I'm so sorry. I'm going to wrap it up real quick. But let me just tell you this. When we did that video diary, it was released and it went viral on the same day that Andrea Sanderlin, the New York pop mom, was arrested for marijuana and is facing 10 years to life. It said pop mom facing 10 years to life for growing marijuana. And in Beverly Hills, it said Beverly Hills mom throws lavish dinner parties and so forth. It went viral, and I'm very proud to say that this summer, my daughter and I have appeared on 17 national and international TV shows. We have reached over 100 million people with our message. And we signed a deal with William Morris Endeavor for our own documentary series on cannabis and following our adventures. So you can see us on Katie Couric, on The View, on ABC, Fox Business News. And I just want to verify once again that you guys are all in this with me together. And one last thing. These little ashtrays here, this is the very first product that we did with Beverly Hills Cannabis Club, and all of the TV things you'll see that I had this as a prototype, and I'm all about product placement, so I was always getting it in the shot. But what was funny, the ladies, when they tried to actually use it, because I only had one, I'd see them start to tip their joint. I'm like, no, you can't take this. But I brought these as gifts for you, and what I'm going to do, I have my business cards. I'm going to throw that. So probably I'm going to throw my business cards out here, and the people who catch those five business cards, I'm going to give them a Beverly Hills Cannabis Club ashtray, okay? So I'm just going to throw these. I'm going to throw these out to the audience. I'm not going to look, but whoever gets them, you're going to get an ashtray, okay? You ready? Everybody ready? Yes? Thank you so much. A round of applause for these ladies. Sorry for going over.
Hi, I'm Willie Nelson, and the Willie Nelson Teapot Party and I endorse the Ohio Rights Group and the Ohio Cannabis Rights Amendment. Little things I
said and done. I just never took the time. You were always on my mind.
You're listening to WEEDRadionetwork.com. Thanks for turning us on.
Three generations of hemp, cannabis, marijuana prohibition greatly contribute to planetary deforestation, pollution, and ozone destruction. Let hemp compete in construction, paper, fiber, fuel, nutritional, and pharmaceutical corporations. Cannabis has been safe, efficient medicine for many illnesses throughout all generations and for natural relaxation. Still, we spend hundreds of billions of dollars and throw away our Constitution to continue this insane persecution.
Over 10 million seriously ill patients must look for their medicine on the street. They, their friends, relatives, and physicians constitute a large segment of the 400,000 arrested yearly because of marijuana prohibition. Where is justice here? Where is freedom here? Stop arresting sick people. Stop putting innocent people in jail.
We are the Drug Policy Alliance. We envision new drug policies grounded in science, compassion, health, and human rights.
Because the war on drugs represents an extraordinary violation of human rights.
Because whether you use drugs or not, you deserve to be treated with respect, kindness, and dignity.
Because the United States has the highest incarceration rate in the world.
We believe the war on drugs is really a war on people.
Because it's time to begin to tell the truth about drugs and our failed drug policies.
Because the war on drugs is a war on people of color.
We promote new solutions to reduce the harms of both drug use and drug prohibition.
I support the Drug Policy Alliance because I believe in the right to sovereignty over one's own mind and body.
Because so many people are incarcerated.
Because I believe in personal freedom and personal choice.
Because the drug war isn't that the war on drugs, it's
the war on people.
I'm Sting, and I am the Drug Policy Alliance.
I'm Montel Williams, and I am the Drug Policy Alliance.
We are the Drug Policy Alliance. Online at drugpolicy.org. Please join us.
Despite a decades-long drug war, billions of dollars spent, and millions of Americans locked up in prisons, drug use rates have remained relatively constant. Any economist will tell you that as long as there's demand, there will always be entrepreneurs with a supply ready to make a profit. When a drug dealer is busted, it's nothing more than a job opening for someone else to fill. This is Economics 101. Join Students for Sensible Drug Policy to help teach lawmakers this simple economics lesson. Visit www.schoolsnotprisons.com to find out more information about SSDP, if there's a chapter at your school, or how to start one. It's time to join the growing opposition to our country's failed war on drugs and start an open, honest, and rational discussion of alternative solutions to our nation's drug problems.
Hey, I'm Willie Nelson, and I started the Teapot Party so we could tax, regulate, and legalize marijuana. If you lean a little to the left like us, please join us at facebook.com/teapotparty or through your local party, including the Cincinnati Northern Kentucky Teapot Party, or start one in your area. And I like that one. Hi, I'm Willie Nelson, and you're listening to Hemp Rock Radio on WEEDRadionetwork.com.
All right, it is Hemp Rock Radio. We are here at the Hemp Rock and WEED Radio Network studios, and I am so very, very happy to tell you who my guest is today. I have a couple of people here in the studio, and it is just so thrilling. My first person I want to mention that is here joining Hemp Rock is Cheryl Schumann, known as the Martha Stewart of marijuana. And we like Martha Stewart, so that's good. also John Pardee. He is the president and executive director of Ohio Rights Group. Can be found at ohiorightsgroup.org. And the topic of today's show is the Ohio Cannabis Rights Amendment that is in the petition signature driving phase of being able to get enough signatures. Once we do, it'll be on the ballot next year, 2014's November election, to put medical marijuana and hemp on that ballot and voted for the state of Ohio, something that the people of the state of Ohio have been wanting for many, many, many years. And I think that with all the efforts that everything's happening with everybody doing this, I think that maybe this might be the year to do it. So in the meantime, the Ohio Rights Group have some events going on around the state to push for this initiative. And they brought in a very special guest that has been hitting all the cities, including Cincinnati, and the rally on Fountain Square that took place Sunday, October 13th. And as I said, I'm very pleased to have Cheryl here in the studio. It is now Monday the 14th. This is the date that we are recording this. And Cheryl, thank you so much for joining Hemp Rock today.
Thank you so much for having me here. As I brought you up on stage last night, I truly, truly believe that it is the women in this movement that's going to change the world and lead us to the path of legalization and overturning cannabis prohibition. And it's just, I'm so happy to be here in my home state and to meet a kindred spirit. So thank you.
Absolutely. Well, let me talk to our other guest, John Pardee. Thank you also for joining us today and pushing this effort. You know, we need the leaders, and I thank you for that.
Well, thanks for having us. It's such an honor to be able to talk to your listeners about how important what we're doing and the beauty of what's coming together this time is unity. Cheryl and I have been talking about unity in the community.
Yeah,
you know, we get your bumps in the road, but I tell you what, of all the years past, this one has really got a lot of momentum. I think this one really has a chance because everybody's really pulling together. They all see it, you know, rich, poor, black, white, that's young, right, and old. They're all, you know, they're getting on board. And I think Ohio realizes time is now. Let's get it done.
Well, one thing we always know about not only just the humans, but animals in general, that when a few people are doing it, the rest are going, I don't know. And then when more people do it, the rest go, I don't know, maybe. And then eventually, oh, okay, it's safe. Let's all do it now. It also, it's a point of getting to that critical mass. And I think we're coming to that critical mass almost. And once we're over that tip, it's all downhill from there. And I think that we're watching it happen. Some of those bricks are coming out of the wall little by little, even on the feds, even though it's not, they're not legislating, they're backing off in some ways. And that's another topic. But so let's do this. Real quick, I want to get from you for the people, for the initiative, give a quick rundown of that. And then I want to talk to Cheryl before she has to go to the airport. She is leaving the city today, but coming back in a couple of days for the state. So real quick, we'll get this part because that's really why Cheryl's here.
Yeah, she's here to support our Ohio Cannabis Rights Amendment. I reached out to her and she was gracious enough to come back out to her home state of Ohio. And because she wants to be able to come home and visit her family without, you know, threat of arrest and prosecution, just like everybody else. So if you go to our website, a lot of people don't realize our petition is downloadable. And it's so important to tweet that and send that message out. Tell people, download the petition off the website. Everybody in all four corners of the state of Ohio, I don't care how a rural of a community you live in, if you have internet connection, you can get your hands on a petition. Yeah. Get all your friends and neighbors to sign it. You cannot sign your own, so make sure if you're going to download two. You know, you and your wife sign each other's, and you both fill them up and mail them into Columbus as soon as possible so we can keep our counts going. We're doing really well. I've been traveling around the state and picking up petitions all over the state. I got almost a trunk full of petitions that are going back to Columbus, so we're really excited about where this is going. So with your help, we can get this done.
Absolutely. And one thing I want to say about the new website, because you just moved into a new one, and it might have been on the old one, but I didn't see it, where you have the map of the state of Ohio with all the counties and all the stuff, and you're keeping a rundown of how many signatures have been gathered, and they're right there on the website for people to see. And I think that's great because it shows that it's happening, and then if somebody sees that, they think, oh, we're getting close. Maybe if I get in there and help, and it'll kind of be that slam dunk in the end.
Well, we're telling all our county captains to turn in their petitions at the end of the tour, which is our last date is in Cleveland on the 19th. And what we want to do is get our counts up to date because I have a feeling with the everything that's coming on, it's going to be a whole new ball game going forward. So we can get this thing going. We got a lot of energy coming up, and you know, once we get an updated count, you know, things are going to be rocking and rolling.
Yeah, well, I'm getting excited. You know, I've been working in this state now, and Kentucky for that matter, since the end of 1990, and all of a sudden, you know, we lost Gatewood Galbraith. Suddenly, there's the hemp's been passed with the help of Ron Paul, or Ron Paul's son, Rand Paul, I should say. And the medical bill for Gatewood's name in honor of him is being worked by one of the senators there, and they're trying to push it through. So it took Gatewood dying for the state of Kentucky to go, you know, maybe we should legalize this stuff. Okay, so we hope that that doesn't have to happen all the time. But my point in that is that I've watched this, and this is the closest I think that Ohio has gotten yet. So I want to thank you for being that leader and trying to get
well, thank you very much.
Together.
One important thing to note, because you did mention that we did switch to a different platform, and people who have registered earlier need to jump on a new platform and re-register.
That's right.
Yeah, we're using a whole new different dynamic program. Some people we can re-import on existing databases. Some may not be able to.
You're
so
right.
It's important everybody goes back, because there's a lot of interesting content on there now. You know, we're gonna be uploading videos from the tour. You know, Cheryl and I have been sharing the stage with some amazing people. You know, Dr. Carone in Toledo and some other amazing folks.
It's great.
The mom and dad who are pushing the Free Bree movement. And we met them. They're incredible people. And we you know, everybody, every time we leave a town, we got a whole new set of people that are just marching and marching, making this thing happen. And this thing's really going to create a wave. And with Cheryl going to Dr. Phil, is really going to spark a whole new, you know, a whole new movement. And I can't wait to see what's going to happen here in the weeks and months to come.
Yeah. And with that, I have to say that I feel very honored to be in between Scott Sloan at WLW and Dr. Phil. Let me just say that. Well, John, I want to thank you again for all the work you're doing and helping put this event on, bringing Cheryl in, and just doing what you're doing for the movement. And by the way, already getting other people in besides what's been happening in Ohio for the last 25, 30 years. I mean, the hippies can do it, but we got to get other people in there, too. You know, we can't do it alone. And
yeah.
So I think those that are not think of themselves as that state of mind, it's going to take all of us, because everybody uses medicine and we all need it. And
amen.
Yeah, amen. So now I want to spend the rest of the time with you, Cheryl. Again, I've kind of watched your career through Facebook. And what year was it that you got sick and got into this?
Well, 1996 was when I first tried cannabis. I was 36 years old. I was the victim of a sexual assault, plus also going through a really bad divorce and having flashbacks from my childhood of some very unpleasant memories. So I was really suffering, and through the care of both my medical doctor as well as my therapist and psychiatrist, at one point they had me on 80 milligrams of Prozac a day, Ativan, Xanax, Halcyon to sleep, another pill then to wake up. And I, you know, they were trying to get my mood stabilized, which they did, and that mood stabilization was 100% pure zombie. And I went from being a very active soccer coach and softball coach for my daughters and PTA activist to literally not being able to get out of bed. And I went to my therapist and doctors and I said, basically, look, this isn't working for me. Not only am I unable to interact with my children, it's like I feel like my kids lost their mom and I can't stop thinking about suicide. I mean, it's just this racing. I'm not planning it. I'm not going to do it. But it's like I just keep going through my head all the different ways you could do it. And it became a very obsessive thing. And one day my doctor looked at me and I told him, I mean, I was in a desperate situation. I didn't know what to do. And he told me about Prop 215 passing in California.
Which was in 96.
1996.
I was gonna say, right after Prop 215. Yeah.
Yeah. I was 36 years old. And he basically looked at me and he said, look, I could go to jail for even telling you this.
And actually, he was wrong.
Really?
I started to say that last night, but you were on stage when you said that.
Really?
Already, the feds had ruled after that they could not and would not go after the doctors if they recommended to their patients. I'm pretty sure that by that 96, when that passed, that was a ruling that came down, and the doctors were allowed to do it after that.
Interesting. No, yeah. I know that he was very fearful. He was like, you know, I could get into trouble for saying this.
They thought they could, but they really couldn't. That was the thing.
Well, but it was more, though, because he gave me the cannabis
now, that's a little
out of his garden.
Yeah,
maybe that was the issue. But anyway, no, he rolled a joint for me. I'd never smoked a cigarette, didn't know how to smoke. He showed me, it worked for me, and I was able to get off of all the pharmaceuticals. My quality of life was great. I was able to get my children back. The children got their mom back. And I used it for a couple of years to get through that period of time until I felt like I was able to cope on my own without assistance, and without any pharmaceuticals or cannabis. But fast forward 10 years later, I was diagnosed with cancer. I was rushed into emergency surgery, and one thing led to another, and I was basically told to prepare for the end, and I used cannabis as a last resort. And I truly believe that cannabis not only saved my life, but I'm 100% sure that it has given me a far superior life over any life that I would have had on pharmaceuticals or using alcohol or tobacco or anything like that. So I'm a firm believer that this is a great plant. It's something that we need to educate people about. And as you had said earlier, you know, it takes a number of people. We're still fighting a drug war. We're at the beginning of the end of cannabis prohibition. Yeah. We're making history, but this is still a war.
It still is, and people are still dying.
Yes, and we all need to get together, I think, especially the women. They always say, you know, when once women approve of this and once the moms are on board, you know, it's game over. And I think that's just vitally important. You know, I'm always inspired, and we were talking about this earlier, about Pauline Sabe and the woman in the 30s who gathered her.
WONPR was that organization.
Yes, WONPR. And just amazing, who gathered all these women of society, and those women overturned alcohol prohibition.
Yes,
and
did.
I truly believe that you and I and a number of these other amazing women that we've met both here in Cincinnati and across the country, as well as even across the world, I have friends in Israel, France, you name it. I believe that we are at a tipping point in this country, because we obviously have our community. We know that they want legalization for cannabis and for hemp. Mm-hmm. But we also know that by reaching mainstream and the success of these mainstream media campaigns, we know that we are reaching out and we're touching the hearts of not only every woman in this country,
yeah,
but also the men and the children and the elderly. And we are literally witnessing the end of cannabis prohibition right now.
Yeah.
So it's very, very exciting.
I have a comment and an idea, because sometimes that's how my head works. It was WNPR, and I always forget the actual words. It's Women's Organization National Prohibition Reform. There you go. And are you aware that a group of women activists a number of years ago recreated that organization and were representing and going to different functions, including Cincinnati, and speaking on behalf of that new organization?
As my mother would say, I did go on the Google and look at that. I haven't reached out to them. It's one of those things where I've thought a million times.
I
think we all should. I really think that this is a time for women from all different groups to come together, and this is for the betterment of our economy, for our families, and
for, you know, I make a challenge to everybody. If you can find one issue from the world of problems that we have and put it in front of me, and if I can't relate that to the drug war or the war on hemp, you know, maybe I'll smoke them down, because I don't think that anybody can come up with any kind of an issue that I can't show you how it's related to the drug war and the war on hemp. So I think it's so many things, and that's what it's really so confusing for a lot of people. It's an overwhelming stack of information of where everything is connected. But, you know, you were one of the founding members of the Normal Women's Alliance, and I know you've moved on to other things, and I think that maybe WNPR would be a really good place for you to land. I'm not sure what's going on with it. Cher McCullough was president for a while, and the last time I talked to her, she's kind of stuck in Iowa now.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure if there is any functioning chapters or anything of that. We need to talk to Cher and see if they would like some help with a little bit of a shot of cannabis into the WNPR.
I think that would be great.
Instead of just invoking the Pauline Sabin history, bringing
teaming up with the spirit, the authentic spirit, right?
The authentic one. That's been created.
I think that's
recreated
a great idea.
Again, I think that's a good place for you to land.
Thank you.
And
thank
so I
you.
Think I will help you. That's one of the things that I do, is try to network people.
I think that would be
you
great.
Know, if I can't do it, maybe you guys can. Right?
Yes. You know, I've also been working with Sarah Frank. I don't know if you know her.
No,
with Moms for Marijuana.
I know of that.
She's a wonderful young woman. And I love the Moms group, the Moms for Marijuana group. Because, you know, there's something about being a mom. You know, we're nurturers, we're caregivers,
that's
we're lovers. We maintain the sanctity of the family and our children. And I think also that once we become mothers, we all become sisters you know, in a way, because we are all here truly for the good of the children and our families.
Yeah. Yeah, it's for the children, as they say. Yeah. Don't get me started on that. So let's do a quick overview, because you are from Ohio. You know, I grew up here too. And I want folks to know where you got started and your relation here in Ohio, what your connection is to Ohio, and how you ended up going out to California and doing what you did. I read a little bit of your bio that you became Michael Jackson's optician, right? Too bad those glasses didn't have the future in them.
Yeah, really.
Maybe that would have helped him, but that's a different issue. He needed Ibogaine, by the way. Michael Jackson needed Ibogaine. Everybody that doesn't know, look up Ibogaine, yourself included.
Yes, I will.
But, so I want a little bit of, that's a little bit, but I want you to give a little bit broader story, a background of
Well, yes, absolutely. Well, I was born and raised outside of a little tiny town called Buena Vista, which was on the Adams County and Scioto County borderline. I went to school in Portsmouth, Ohio.
Where the really good pot comes from.
That's what I've heard.
Adams County.
Yeah, we had an 1,800-acre farm there, and I was basically a farmhand. I mean, when you grow up on a farm, everybody pitches in, and that's how you earn your keep.
That's why they have the children.
Yes, well, exactly. born farmhands.
Exactly.
But, you know, I learned how to, you know, bale hay, plant tobacco, plug tobacco, cure tobacco, and, you know, have very, very fond memories of growing up and learning a tremendous work ethic. And, you know, we were poor. We didn't realize we were poor. But, you know, I remember growing up and learning really the things that are truly valuable, which are our honor and our integrity and our ethics and our moral fiber and, you know, loving thy neighbor and our families and everything. So I learned a lot about those humble beginnings and literally grew up on the farm. My family would let me keep the scraps of tobacco, so I was able to sell enough tobacco to pay my way through private school. So I went to school in Portsmouth and then went on to Columbus, attended Ohio State, and so forth, and was very, very fortunate when I was in school in that I had put together this couponing and refunding system, was discovered by the Bob Braun show here at WLWT, as well as in the same week, PM Magazine, which was being filmed out of WCMH-TV.
Yeah, for the young folk or folks that aren't from this area, Bob Braun was the next thing after the Ruth Lyons show. It was our Johnny Carson locally. And Bob Braun had it for many, many years, then became our newsman. And now, as I told you, his son, Rob Braun, is a news guy here, I think, WKRC. And it's a long history in this town. And as I told you last night, I think I remember, because if you were 17, I was 18 and a young mother sitting at home at the time. And my own mother, huge fan of Ruth Lyons. That was always on in my house, just like Johnny Carson. And it was just a regular thing. And I remember, and here's my connection to what you were doing. My family was grocery store. I grew up with a butcher father, butcher grandfather. I started in the meat department. I learned everything throughout the whole grocery store. And of course, that includes coupons and all of that kind of stuff. So that's normal to us. I was even a demonstrator for many, many years, like my mother. Would you like a sample, ma'am? And you name it, all over this town. So it's part of the shtick that I know, working the coupons and giving coupons out. So for that, at that time, we were watching.
I
have this vivid memory of this young girl on Bob Braun, and that was you.
Yeah,
fantastic.
You
know, so go ahead.
He was just one of the nicest, sweetest guys. Now it was my first TV thing, you know, as you know, and I was just all bright eyed and bushy tailed, and I just had the best time. And on the very first appearance I did there, he actually offered me a job on the air. Yeah. He's like, "Ladies and gentlemen, how isn't she great? You know, how would you like to see her a couple of times a week here on the Bob Braun Show?" Oh, everybody's clapping. And I just remember having the biggest grin on my face and thinking, "Yeah, you know, this is fun,
it
you know, and
fun.
I'm going to get
That's
paid
right.
too. Wow, this is
yeah.
cool."
Yeah.
And then the PM Magazine thing came along. But so fast forward to when I was 23, I had a really bad car accident, went through the windshield of a car, ended up going to California, wasn't able to do television anymore for a while. And, you know, when you're from Ohio, your family always tells you you need to have something to fall back on. You should have a trade just in case things don't work out, because that TV business, you just never know.
That's right.
So I had my license in optics and was a licensed optician, and went out to California, landed a job at a local optical shop in Encino. Michael Jackson comes in one day in disguise. I offered to make a house call, and as they say, the rest of is history.
Yeah.
I ended up building a multi-million dollar company and was known as the optician to the stars, and worked with just about everyone who's anyone, including Tom Cruise and Julia Roberts and Madonna and Warren Beatty and Arnold
George
Schwarzenegger
Clooney?
And George Clooney.
He's our homeboy.
I mean, yes, he is. In fact, Nick Clooney used to sit across the desk from my ex-husband, who's also a newsman.
Wonderful.
So there's so many. Yeah, there's so many connections. But yeah, I was really, really lucky. Worked as the optician of stars, built that company, raised my two daughters, went through the divorce, tried cannabis, got cancer, came back to Ohio, and that's where I reunited with a friend from high school who told me about his sister growing a specific strain for cancer. And when I was getting ready to enter hospice care, we decided with my family that I would go and hang out at the farm. And he said, you know what, if you're going to go out with a smile, or if you're going to go out of life, you might as well go out with a smile.
That's right.
So that's when I learned about cannabis again, kind of rediscovered it after a 10-year period. And it just made me feel better. You know, at the time, I was on 27 pharmaceuticals, an intravenous morphine pump, in tremendous pain, and really didn't have much of a quality of life. I was just kind of waiting to die. No, I just kind of accepted it. I was like, gosh, can you come in already? And, you know, at a certain point, I was even looking into physician-assisted suicide in Oregon, because when you're chronically ill, when you're very, very ill, you don't want to be a burden to people. And you can see and sense in people's body language, and they just, at a certain point, they don't know what to say or do anymore, and you can feel you're becoming a burden. So all you want to do is just, let's just take care of this.
Yeah.
But I got really lucky in that my family was there for me, my daughter was there for me, and when I realized how much better I was feeling with cannabis, literally off of the pharmaceuticals completely, off of the intravenous morphine pump, able to bathe by myself, able to go to the bathroom by myself and be independent within 60 days, and within 90 days,
wow,
I was able to drive again, I was able to go back to work, and I was able to rebuild my life. So I sat down with my daughter, I said, look, I really want to be out of the closet on this. I mean, this is something people need to understand. We've been lied to. There are things that have been going on. This can really help people. And my daughter was very concerned. First of all, she was concerned that if I stayed in Ohio, I would get in trouble. She didn't want people to be mean to me or to speak poorly of me, because you're harshly judged in some circles if you use cannabis. But
she's
to me,
right,
it's like, look, if you can't stand for something, if you can't leave a legacy behind and really do something with your life, then why are we here? You know, I didn't come into this life to just kind of like blah, blah, blah. You know, I'm here to make a difference. So I decided to do it anyway. And that's what I've done. You know, I've really dedicated my life to doing what I do, being both an activist and working in the media.
Mm-hmm.
And it allows me, you know, when my friend John Pardee calls me from Ohio and says, hey, you know, can you come and help us? I hear you're a hometown girl, you know, and I was, you know, I cried a little bit at first, because it's like, oh my God, you know, people actually like me. But, you know, it was just a no-brainer. This is something that needs to be done.
Yeah.
And I'm a firm believer, you know, just like I learned about branding and doing commercials and doing media with Bob Braun. I used to love watching him do his own commercials, and I learned
and
about
like you said, live.
Branding. Yeah.
Live.
And I thought about it, and I talked to my daughter, and by working in PR and media, I said, you know, Amy, pot just needs a rebranding campaign. This is a simple rebranding campaign with a new face, you know, and something that the soccer moms and parents can be comfortable with, because parents, they're not bad people. They're just afraid. They're scared because they're still living in some reefer madness, uneducated.
And children are getting taken from parents that use medical marijuana.
Well, and that leads us to the Dr. Phil show.
Yeah.
I was called by Dr. Phil, his producers. They are having Antonio Sabato Jr. on, and Antonio Sabato Jr. is of the mindset that anyone who has children under the age of 18 should not be allowed to use cannabis, should not be allowed to grow cannabis, should not be allowed to be a caregiver for cannabis, and basically that anyone with children under the age of 18 does not deserve to have their children in the home if they are in the cannabis lifestyle, as he calls it.
I think maybe his career is getting low and he's trying to get some coverage himself. I have not seen him in a lot of stuff. Now, maybe he's had a personal issue in his own life of stuff like this. And maybe your comment that maybe it's all about the courts and he's trying to make his ex-wife look bad and this and that. Let's face it. You can go down to any courthouse in our country, and every day you're going to see people in the court where the wife or the husband got mad at the other one and snitched on their grow opper that they're smoking pot.
I think you're absolutely
right. All the time. And so I think Antonio needs to know, or the question needs to be asked of him. Your child is sick, and you've got this drug over here that, you know, potentially can kill them while they're trying to save the child. And you got this one over here that, you know, never killed anybody, and that's the one that's really going to save your child. What are you going to do, Antonio? Do you want to, you're going to let your kid die or use the drugs that are going to hurt them in the long run? Or are you going to let them have the safest substance known to man that man's been using for thousands of years for their children and go, nope, you can't have that one?
You know, I did an interview on CNN with Piers Morgan.
I saw part of that.
And it was, my daughter and I were pitted against an addiction specialist. And it was the first time that my daughter had been faced with that kind of a confrontation and in unfriendly waters.
Yeah.
And when this man came on and literally started yelling at us saying, you and your daughter are dangerous. You are poisoning the minds of our children. You should be like excommunicated from the community. All this. And I just, my daughter and I were like, whoa, he didn't just say that.
Who's paying your paycheck, sir? Follow the money.
Well, do you want to know what's really interesting is after we looked at it, and I think this is going to be similar with Antonio, when you looked into the addiction counselor, turns out he's a recovering heroin addict.
Of course.
With many felonies in his past for heroin trafficking. So generally, when I encounter someone who's very confrontational like that, who's a teetotaler, who believes that there's this one black and white policy for parenting, especially, I think they really believe that because they're fighting with their own addictions, you know. But what they need to understand, not everyone operates from an addiction mentality. And when we know, as educated cannabis consumers, we know that cannabis is safer than alcohol, it's safer than tobacco, it's safer than pharmaceuticals. So my question to Antonio is, when did God die, put you in his position, and how dare you have people who are truly sick, like the multiple sclerosis people that you claim to be representing, when your friend who had MS, and I realized that through our Dr. Heather, who told me that 73% of all MS patients use cannabis to alleviate their symptoms and give them a better quality of life, what I want to know is what makes him God and gave him all of a sudden a medical degree that he can judge that MS patient, among many other patients, that's just one example, should not be able to use the medicine that works for them. And more importantly, they're apparently not fit for parenthood. How does he explain that to his friend that has MS? I'm dying of curiosity because I know plenty of people who are upstanding legal cannabis patients, legal cannabis growers, and legal cannabis caregivers who are excellent parents, who know how to parent responsibly and don't have addiction issues.
That's right.
We all know that you can get addicted to caffeine, to cigarettes, to sugar. I mean, if you have an addictive predisposition to be an addict, you're going to be addicted.
There's a short article in Wired magazine this month, and it's talking about the sugars and different stuff and how the sugar reacts in the brain and why sugar isn't good and blah, blah, blah. And it goes on to say it's an addiction and blah, blah, blah. And then it says, and in your brain, the brain reacts to sugar the same way it does cocaine. Boom. Done. The same way. Now, on the back of some of my t-shirts, that's one of the facts, is that sugar is as addictive, if not more, than heroin. I was made a sugar addict from the bottle on. The biggest pediatrician in Cincinnati, my formula from my mother, because it was the bottle days, I'm 54, so you know the era, was Carnation Instant Milk with maltodextrose added for flavoring, and then a squirt of liquid vitamins, because, of course, there's none in the milk. And so I was turned into a sugar addict from birth. And it's one of the worst addictions I've ever dealt with. I smoked 25 years. I quit 19 years ago. That was way easier than sugar. And yeah, white powder. Okay. Or even a little yellow if you want. But one of the things that again, ibogaine, it's the African plant that has alkaloids in it that help in the brain chemicals stop that craving for opiates, for tobacco, for alcohol. Unfortunately, it's one of the Schedule Ones, and people can't get it here. Law and Order had a wonderful, wonderful SVU episode for Ibogaine. You should look it up and watch it. I encourage everybody to do that. So when the addiction specialist hits you, you need to start hitting them with the Ibogaine, because they're even totally unaware of it. And that, with that, you don't even need the methadone and other stuff. Okay, but again, that's a different issue. That really is. I think with Antonio Sabata, I think that the real hard hitting thing again is to put it with his child. If there's nothing else in the world, and your child's going to die without this medicine, are you going to go, oh nope, she's not 18, can't have her medicine? I mean, come on, they're giving Ritalin to 2 year olds. We want to know why people are going postal in our country. And every time we turn around, some kid or somebody's shooting up somewhere. Every case, they've all been on psych drugs. And they're having these suicidal thoughts. And they're having these murderous thoughts. And this is where they're, how it's ending up. So if you want to go with that, you can. If not, you don't even have to touch on that. But I just think that it really is about the kids. He wants to hit it with the children, hit right back in there with the children.
Amen.
Yeah. So, well, I know we're getting ready to let you guys go because you got to get to the airport. So I want to call this the first half. And I would love when you get settled back in California to do a follow-up on how you feel the tour went. And as you see, I have a way to do that with our phone call machine here in the studio. And so I want to get a follow-up and see what you how you feel the tour went. And I also want to know, get your inside story on the Dr. Phil show.
Yeah, I'm okay. Nervous. I've been told that they're expecting a serious debate. And so I'm preparing for battle.
I can't wait. I've been just yelling at the screen, when are you going to do marijuana, Dr. Phil? And I thank you for making that happen.
Well, I just hope I do a good job and that people are proud of me. I'm sure that I'll do something wrong because I'm human, but I do want everyone to know that I'm going to do everything in my power to represent well and have people be proud of me.
Just do what you just did right now, and that was the best closing argument. That was amazing. Yeah. When you get your back up, I pity the fool.
Yeah. I think people are going to get it because, you know, with the two states legal now and almost 20 states medical, I think people are starting to get it. And if somebody does that knee-jerk stuff and that reefer madness and that, oh, it's terrible, people are starting to go, yeah, really? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not going to work anymore. And I think that Dr. Phil, he's smart enough to know. So you invoke Dr. Sanjay.
I love Dr. Sanjay Gupta. Yeah. He's
you
been
invoke
great.
Him because Phil cannot argue with Sanjay.
Well, thank you, Lynn, for having us. This has been an absolutely amazing experience.
My website is Cheryl, Cheryl Schumann, Schumann.com, and my social network is BeverlyHillsCannabisClub.com.
Wonderful. And the org?
Is the Ohio Rights Group. .org. Please sign up, be a volunteer, make a donation, and download the petition. Let's get it done, Ohio.
Absolutely, absolutely. And of course, I'm going to go ahead and close this, but of course, I will be playing the clip from Willie Nelson and the Teapot Party, your endorsement, and I'll throw some songs in there, and I can't wait to see Dr. Phil. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Willie Nelson, and the Willie Nelson Teapot Party and I endorse the Ohio Rights Group and the Ohio Cannabis Rights Amendment.
Little things I should have said and done, I just never took the time. You were always on my mind.
This has been Hemp Rock Radio with the Happy Hemptress on
WEEDRadionetwork.com. Thanks for turning us on.
Find Hemp Rock Radio at WEEDRadionetwork.com.
Watch Hemp Rock TV on WEEDRadionetwork.com.
You can join the Hemp Rockers list at HempRock.com and the Hemp Rock Hemp line at 513-684-HEMP. That's 513-684-HEMP. Please visit CincinnatiMarijuanaLaw.com. That's CincinnatiMarijuanaLaw.com. Hemp Rock Radio, the Pottsbury Bakery, and Hemp Rock Cafe are brought to you by Hemp Rock Productions. Thanks for listening. Get high.